important work for us to do here in orbit, but except for the few who are going to probe the tiny moons, the scientists here would gladly commit murder for the chance to replace any one of the men or women down on the planet's surface. I am being melodramatic, he sighed to himself. These are all adult human beings, the healthiest and most stable men and women who could be selected out of the thousands who sought positions on this expedition, the best of the best. They have their problems, naturally. We all face stresses and emotional tensions. It would be foolish to expect otherwise. My task is to reconcile these problems and make certain that they do not interfere with the performance of our mission. But how healthy and stable was it for that American to speak Navajo to the world's media? How healthy and stable is it for anyone to want to fly off to another world, risking one's life for the thrill of setting foot where no one has stepped before? Ah, said Lee to himself, perhaps that is a form of madness that is divine. The human beast is an explorer, a wanderer, and always has been. Young Waterman's ancestors would never have roamed from Asia to America if it were not thus. Dealing with 24 such wandering souls while simultaneously trying to keep their overseers back on Earth placated, that requires the patience of a Confucius, the intelligence of an Einstein, and the guile of a Machiavelli. I am none of them. Yet as far as these young men and women are concerned, as far as the mission controllers in Kaliningrad and Houston are concerned, I am all of those things and more. And so I must continue to appear to them, if for no other reason than to protect them from their politicians back on Earth. Even when I really want to pursue that slender young blonde who is running the cartographic cameras, such a tempting smile. Lee sighed heavily. Damned annoying, being a sage. Sol 2. Evening. Hoshima, the Japanese corrected. Not Hoshima. Jamie unconsciously bowed his head slightly, acknowledging the meteorologist's pronunciation. Hoshima's voice was soft, and he smiled as he spoke, but it was clear that he wanted his name pronounced his way. He seemed big for a Japanese, slightly taller than Jamie himself, thick-bodied, with a round, flat-featured face. The wardroom felt almost crowded with all 12 of them sitting together. They had pushed the 3 tables together and, after a long day of unloading supplies and equipment, were celebrating with a festive dinner. Vosnesensky and his fellow Russian, Mironov, sat shoulder to shoulder at one end of the table, 2 squat fireplugs in gray coveralls. The American astronauts, Connors and Paul Abel, were on the Russians' left. The 3 women sat across from the Americans, and the other scientists had seated themselves around the rest of the table. Jamie had spent more than an hour during the free time after they had finished unloading the second LAV, composing a conciliatory note for Houston. He had used Lee's words as exactly as he could remember them. I was overwhelmed with emotion upon stepping onto the surface of Mars and relapsed into the language of my ancestors. That ought to satisfy the pisspot sons of bitches, he thought, as he transmitted his apology to the spacecraft orbiting above. Now he sat at the improvised dining table, flanked on one side by Seiji Toshima and on the other by Tony Reed. I've wondered why the Japanese weren't represented in the first landing, Reed mused, as he picked at his tray of pre-cooked beef slices. After all, if it weren't for Japan's contribution of funding and electronics hardware, we would never have gotten here. Toshima looked up from his rice and fish at the Englishman. Such decisions were made by the politicians. Japan is not so prideful that one day's difference matters to us. It is enough to be part of this expedition. With a winking glance at Jamie, Reed teased. Yes, but after all, even Israel and Brazil were represented before Japan. And even England, said Toshima thinly. Ah, but England, Reed countered, represents the European community. Toshima bowed his head slightly. Then, of course, Reed continued amiably, there is the Navajo Nation. Jamie put down his plastic fork. Tony, you know as well as any of us that the final decisions on who went aboard which ship determine the order of landing. Why make an issue of it? Indeed, said Toshima, it is sufficient for us to be here, regardless of which hour each one of us put his first boot print on the ground. Reed made a gracious nod and brushed back the stubborn lock of sandy hair that fell across his forehead. "I accept your superior wisdom. Excuse my English gamesmanship, please." Reed broke into a conversation on his left, and Toshima started talking to the Egyptian geophysicist on his right, leaving Jamie sitting alone and wishing that it was a burrito or even a supermarket taco on the microwave tray before him. He had not tasted real food since he had left Houston more than 10 months ago. The nutritionists who planned the meals for this expedition had paid careful attention to the varying national tastes of the Mars explorers, so they had thought. Jamie was eating their version of the Italian meals prepared for Father DiNardo. Soybean paste, attempting to look like veal cutlets. Spaghetti that miraculously managed to be dry and mushy at the same time. It was all so bland. DiNardo's damned gallbladder problems had ruled out spices, apparently. That's what you get for taking another man's position, Jamie told himself. Eat DiNardo's meals and be grateful you're here in his place. He glanced at the three women, talking among themselves. Ilona's patrician face was animated, smiling as she spoke, her hands a flurry of gestures. Little Joanna looked almost solemn, as if hearing bad news. The other woman, Monique Bonnet, was nodding in rhythm to Ilona's gesticulations. Bonnet was tiny, even shorter than Joanna, but as plump as a Provençal matron. She was older than the other two, her thick, dark hair speckled with gray, laughter wrinkles at the corners of her eyes. Her face was round, with ruddy cheeks that dimpled when she smiled. She must have been a beauty when she was younger, Jamie thought, and thinner. Liquor was strictly off-limits as far as the mission regulations went, so naturally every member of the expedition had carried aboard a bottle or two among his or her personal baggage. Jamie, inserted at the last minute and flown unexpectedly from his quarters in Houston to the launching center in Florida, never had a moment to buy, borrow, or steal so much as a can of beer. Boss Nesensky rapped his knuckles on the table, making it rattle dangerously. "I want to make it clear," he said, almost in a growl, "that this is the last occasion on which liquor will be tolerated." Groans and grumbles down the table. "We have much work to do and little time to do it. Liquor is strictly forbidden. It could be a safety hazard." Osnesensky was simply stating the mission rules, but no one felt happy about it. "However, since this is the first night here on Mars for all 12 of us," he said, pushing himself to his feet, "I wish to propose a toast." Relieved sighs and grins broke out around the table. 7 men and the 3 women raised glasses of whiskey, vodka, brandy, wine, and sake. Jamie lifted his water glass and noticed that whatever Voznesensky had in his plastic glass was also clear. "We have been through a difficult time," Voznesensky said, his heavy features quite serious. With a glance at Ilona Molitor, he went on. 9 months aboard the spacecraft created certain tensions, certain problems."
"At least no one got pregnant," Tony Reed whispered, loud enough to generate a few giggles. Voznesensky glared at him.
"Tomorrow our true work begins, the conquest of Mars."
"Conquest?"
Jamie's mind flashed pictures of the white man's conquest of America. "That's not what we're here for. Nobody's going to conquer Mars."
"The next 7 weeks will test us," Voznesensky was going on. "Make no mistake about it. Each of us will be tested to his limit, or hers. Mars will test us all." "Our arms are getting tired, Mikhail Andreevich," quipped Mironov, grinning. "Is this a toast or a speech?"
Voznesensky did not smile. Quite seriously, he raised his glass even higher and said,
"May each of us find on Mars what we are looking for."
"Za vashe zdorovye!" exclaimed Mironov.
"Zdorovye!"
Voznesensky echoed. They all drank. Jimmy's water tasted flat, sterile.
"I wonder just what it is that each of us is looking for," Tony Reed called from his end of the table.
"Good question," said Abel, the American astronaut, with a grin that creased his face from chin to hairline.
He reminded Jamie of a frog, bulging eyes, round cheeks, and a wide, grinning slit of a mouth.
"Me, I'd like to find some beautiful Martian women who've been without men for 1,000 years or so."
A few tolerant chuckles from the scientists. Ilona cast him a sultry look.
No, seriously, Reed said. I'm curious to know what each of us hopes to find on Mars.